Welcome back to Chattering Mist. We ended the last segment based on a call from Glenn, who's still with us, and we have the Kirkmeister here, too, as well, talking about why it was that Yahweh didn't proclaim a like one of his ten statements that he etched in stone. He doesn't write, "You should not enslave others." You know, he's got his instructions, and the enslavement of others didn't make his top ten list. And yet, in the two really long, expressive presentations of slavery, he presents himself as a liberator, and he instructs his children to liberate slaves. Now, why do you think that is, guys?
Well, I'm sorry, Glenn, you want to go first?
No, go ahead, Kirk.
Okay, I was going to say, his first statement in stone is, "I am Yahweh, your God, who relationally brought you out of and delivered you from the realm of and the crucible of Egypt." I mean, what
correct.
Do you mean he doesn't say about freedom? I mean, that's from slavery. That's his, what other, mm-hmm. There it is.
Yeah, well, he doesn't say to the Egyptians, well, he did tell them, "Let my people go." So he did tell the Egyptians, "Let my people go." But, you know, he didn't. This wasn't one of the ten stones that we should never enslave others. What he does is he positions himself as the liberator.
Yes.
And what I just came to the conclusion is that God doesn't, well, God has examples throughout his testimony as to how we would best interact with our fellow man.
Yeah.
And one of them is we ought not be political or patriotic or militaristic or religious. God recognizes that human institutions are going to do what they do. They're going to be belligerent. They're going to be violent. They're going to usurp people's freedoms. They're going to enslave. And so, you know, it's not God's business to tell the Roman Catholic Church how to operate. It's not God's business to tell the American government how to operate. It's not God's business to tell a military junta how to operate. He has no interest in them. He has no investment in them. He has no plan for them. And so it's not God's business to tell governments and countries that they should not enslave. Not his business. His business is the covenant. And so and that's his family. So he is presenting himself as the alternative to human, political, religious, and military institutions. He is saying, "I'm the liberator. You know, if you want to be liberated from the economics of man, from the militarism of man, from the politics of man, from the religions of man, I am your only reliable liberator." So he's presenting himself as the contrast to human institutions as opposed to influencing human institutions.
That's the way I would view it, but he also, knowing that they would enslave somebody sometime, even his people, he gave them guidelines on what they should not do and what they should.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. The mistreatment of slaves is prohibited. Yeah. He just says, you know, with my people, you know, I don't want you to mistreat slaves. Now, I think Yahweh also knew that that within human institutions, the option would often be, as it has been for so long in Islam, if they do not enslave, they kill. Now, enslaving isn't as bad as killing. I mean, there's not a lot of things that are worse than enslaving, but killing is worse than enslaving. And so what he recognized is that was the nature of human institutions, and he said, so, you know, if you're going to do it, you know, you're not going to get my approval, but if you're going to be my people, this is what you're going to do. You're going to treat those people decently. You're not going to rape them. You're not going to beat them. You're not going to kill them. You don't have the authority to do those things. Don't do that. Treat people decently. But he does tell his people that they do have to relieve all captives, all slaves. They have to release them. Every 50 years, they absolutely, on the Yobel, they have to release them. So For his own people, he provides guidance as to what they have to do. Now, he could have said, don't enslave anybody. But if he says, don't enslave anybody, then how does he emphasize the majesty and the purpose and the intent of the Yovel years, which is when he releases all of us from slavery, liberates all of us? So long as slavery exists as a human institution that he does not sanction, then there's the contrast between man and slaves. Now look at feudal Europe under the Roman Catholic Church. Man and slaves, look at in the Islamic country, like the story from Bangladesh. Man and slaves, Yahweh liberates. And so long as slavery exists as an institution of man, so long as militarism and economic schemes and religions exist as institutions of man, there is this vivid contrast between man abusing, offering false hope, misleading, and God's reliable, clear, enlightening, and empowering, dependable testimony that liberates us from these things. That's the contrast.
Yeah. Well, you have to have the option, don't you?
You do. And, you know, if there was no alternative, what would be the purpose of free will? You know, for those that are troubled by Yahweh makes the statement that, you know, he created the adversary and he even created evil. Without evil, without bad, without, you know, corruption and deceit, then what is the benefit of and what is the contrast? What's the choice regarding reliable and trustworthy testimony? If the only testimony is trustworthy and reliable, where is your free will? And also, Satan has to exist for there to be a alternative. Human institutions have to exist for people to decide whether they want to be part of man's schemes or God's covenant. And so slavery is one of the ultimate contrasts. And it's such a shame because that's the place where Satan inspired Paul to create this this myth that the Torah, which is Yahweh's means to liberate, that the Torah enslaves. And it inverted the truth. And inverted the truth in a place that was just so counterproductive to people being part of the covenant and being guided to God. But that's the contrast that God has made. And look how enslaving the church, the religion that Paul conceived became.
And is.
And is. Exactly.
So yeah. It depends on also, like, you know, aside from just the word slavery or perhaps how you defend the word slavery, you look at all the different malevolent, you know, circumstances and economic arrangements and systems.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, one needn't have the title slave to be under grinding oppression. You know,
right.
Look at, like, in Saudi Arabia, this is the Islamic, right. These contractors sign up, they go to Saudi Arabia to work, they take their passports and then grind them up and they can't even go home because they don't have their passports, stuff like that.
Yeah, and they're physically abused and they're tortured. They're paid a fraction of what they said they would be paid. And they have absolute freedom. They become slaves. That's correct.
Right.
But think of half the population of Saudi Arabia. Are not women prisoners of and slaves of men? They have no rights. They can't drive a car. They can't go out on their own. They exist for the pleasure of men. Period. They are half the population of Saudi Arabia, and every fundamentalist Islamic country is a slave. All women are slaves to men.
Yeah, and then and you compare that, the treatment of women by Islam, and then you look at the way men are portrayed here in America in the media, and there's this horrific contempt. I mean, the average American male, you know, isn't that bad a guy that he deserves to be, you know, so roundly slandered all the time. Women are treated fairly well here. They've broken through the glass ceiling in many ways. They're doing quite well, and you know, when, you know, the, and yet, American men are made out to be,
correct,
you know, stupid jerks when they're treating people for their women.
But the,
fairly,
but
well,
the same, the same liberal commentators, though, will exonerate the Muslim male.
Yeah, they will. They will not tell the truth. This is the,
yes,
the, just this amazing, you know, horrific lie. You know, there's just people going on here and lying about everything all the time.
Oh, yeah. But how free are you when, if you don't pay your property tax, you know, you own the property. Government doesn't own the property. I'm not using any service that the government provides on my property. I really am not. I mean, the roads are paid by my fuel taxes. They, I pay for the utilities. I pay for the sewer. I pay for the water. I pay for the electricity. I've never called the fire department. I have, you know, fire depression systems on the houses that I own. I've never called the police where I've gotten any benefit from them at all. I'm not using the services of government. Why are they? I'm not using their schools. Why am I paying this house here $25,000 a year in property tax? Yeah, if I own it, why am I paying them that? If I owned my businesses, why did I pay the government 40% of our profits?
Right. Right.
I mean, did the government own my business? I mean, I must have, because they got their share first.
Right.
And if I didn't pay them what they demanded, they'd throw me in jail.
Your personal income tax is even greater because you have to tag on besides almost 50 in state and federal, at least out here.
Yeah, and you've got
15% of Social Security. You cannot, you know, it's not
right.
Deductible.
Yeah, 15% Social Security plus another 15% state, you know, in a state like California, another 15% of state tax. Plus the up to 40% federal income tax, plus your property tax, plus your sales tax.
And a floor tax if you have inventory. They used to charge you.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. It's
well, and in 3 hours, I have to return for my final 8-hour shift of my fourth consecutive 16-hour day.
Right.
But which will probably kick me into a higher tax bracket, which will make the take-home thing look not quite as good, you know?
And it's just amazing.
Thank you for your support.
So, yeah, so who are you working for? Are you really free if they can confiscate your earnings this way? You know, it's, we're kidding ourselves in America when we consider ourselves free. And yet, in many worlds, freedom is even more fleeting than that. To tell me the name of the most revered American institution, the institution that everyone from politicians to the media, really all societal leaders, kowtow to. Tell us that we should respect them, honor them, appreciate their sacrifice. What would that institution be?
Military.
That's correct. If you sign up for the U.S. military and you become an enlisted man and or woman in the U.S. military, do you get to choose what you do?
No.
In some cases.
Yeah. They will.
I can get the contract up front.
Yeah, there's sometimes where you can say, you know, I want to be in this particular regiment or I want to do this particular thing, if you get it up front. But once you're in, I know for certain that you can say, you know, I'd like to be in the supply corps, and they will take it under advisement. I would like to work in this state, and they'll consider it, but they will determine where you go, and you will go where they say. Do you get to determine when you work if you're part of the U.S. military?
No, you
do not. You need to work all the time. You need to work beyond the time of your contract with stop loss.
Right. Yeah, with stop loss, they'll even after the 4 years that you've signed up for, where you have sacrificed all freedom, stop loss means that within 7 years of that time, they can drag you back in and deprive you of all your freedom. They can send you where they want you to go. They can tell you, and they don't, by the way, they do not have to abide by any of the labor laws in the United States. You know, the labor laws that say that you only work so many hours a day and all of the protections of labor. Well, none of those protections exist in the U.S. military. And you will wear the uniform that they tell you to wear. And you get a chance if an officer, as an enlisted man, if an officer comes up to you and says, I want you to lift that bag of beans and carry it 200 yards down over there yonder. Do you get a chance to say, you know, I didn't enlist in the military to be a bean carrier? And if you did, what would happen to you? Dereliction of duty, failure to follow an order, what little freedom you may have is usurped and you're thrown in the brig. The least free institution in the world today would be the U.S. military. You have absolutely no freedom in the U.S. military. You are a slave to that government agency. They own you. If you were to look at the things, for example, that came out of Texas, the news that came out of Texas yesterday with the woman that was 3 days in jail for failing, her crime was that she failed to show indication when she had a lane change. And she, third day in jail, she ended up dying. How much freedom do you have in America if a belligerent, out of control, vicious cop, of which there are way too many, pulls you over for some minor indiscretion and claims that he wants to arrest you, and you say, no, I'm a free person. You have no right to arrest me. You know, the crime of failure to indicate does not cause me to be thrown in jail. And yet, if you resist their arrest, you know, this woman was thrown in jail for days upon days. Couldn't get out. Couldn't get out.
Mm.
Thrown in a cell. You know how, I mean, I had an employee that was thrown in jail. And so I got a vivid depiction of what life in jail was like. And I want to tell you, it is absolutely, in an American jail, it is absolutely reprehensible. I mean, it is so violently and morally and physically disgusting. And yet, and this woman was thrown in jail for having a failure to indicate and then not following the cop's order to put out her cigarette and get out of the car when he then physically tried to manhandle her out of the car and then threatened to tase her. The fact that she wouldn't acquiesce to being threatened to be tased, she finds herself in jail. What kind of a free society is that? And by the way, Glenn, we apologize. We inadvertently cut you off, and we apologize for having done so.
It wasn't we. It was me. I'm sorry.
Okay. But the reality is we don't live in a free society. What about Europe? For 1,000 years under the Holy Roman Empire and the Roman Catholic Church and this integration of cleric and king, is that freedom? Were the serfs free? I don't think so. We'll be back. If you examine them, of the economic schemes available to nations, free enterprise, socialism, fascism, and communism, only two of those even have a pretense of freedom. Free enterprise and socialism have a pretense of freedom. But as we've talked about, you really aren't free because your government can arrest you at any time without cause. Your savings can be locked up as they are in Greece. Your earnings can be confiscated. So you're only marginally free even within those countries. But in a fascist country or a communist country, there is no even pretense of freedom. The government demands all and controls all. You guys probably have read some or all of Brave New World, Animal Farm, or 1984.
Oh, yeah. Sure.
Are any of those individuals in those futuristic societies free?
No, not even the people who work for the government that does it.
No.
Well, they may not be free, but they were equal, but some were more equal than others. More
yeah, they, that's right. There are the enlightened, the elitists in control were of course, more equal. But the average person, it's kind of like what communism does. It creates a common denominator of impoverished, enslaved individuals. And so that are they free? Of course not. And, you know, what's interesting is that in most cultures, and not at all, I mean, fascism, I don't think this is the case, but in so many cultures and in those stories, the people were indoctrinated into and their apathy, ultimately, their lack of character, their lack of will, their lack of determination, their lack of good judgment and responsibility, caused them to be in those sets of circumstances. They didn't consider themselves enslaved.
At the time.
Yeah.
There's one talk radio show host who says that without the freedom to say no, there is no freedom. You know, or there is no freedom without the freedom to say no. And then think about it. There's something to that. You know, I mean, it's, mm-hmm. You know, someone else can impose their his or her will upon you, and you can't say no. Are you really free? You know?
Yeah, of course not. Yeah, of course not. And that's this.
Yahweh at least lets you say no.
That's right. Yeah, Yahweh allows you to, in fact, first, Yahweh encourages you to say no
yes.
to all human schemes and to say yes to him, but he absolutely allows you to say no to him.
Yeah.
There's no punishment. There's no punishment.
Punishment for you. I mean, but you don't just continue because there's nowhere else to continue with.
Right. Yeah. There's no punishment for those who say no to him. He's not okay with it. Disappointed by it, I'm sure, but gives you the opportunity to say no without you're true. It's without and like in the military, because you cannot say no to an order. You're not free.
Yeah. Right.
You know, to in America. If you're like the woman that was pulled over for failure to indicate on a lane change, and the cop is belligerent, and he threatens you, trying to drag you out of the car, and then threatens to light you up if you don't acquiesce, and then beat you up and arrest you, and then throws you in jail, do you think that that woman was free to tell that cop no?
Absolutely not, no.
No.
But, that's crazy. And it's funny, even our conscription laws, military conscription, are constitutional. The Constitution forbids compulsory service. And then they went ahead and put military conscription in later anyway.
Oh, of course.
You know?
Because the Constitution is not a document to be adhered to. You know, America was founded as this, as a republic. Based upon the rule of law, and the law was the Constitution, but it has been almost universally ignored by those empowered. It's used as a ploy to justify all manner of ridiculous things. But you're not free. And if you were free in America, the Constitution grants you the right to keep and bear arms. It doesn't limit the arms that you can keep and bear. And yet, if I were to go and leave my house here in Ohio with a concealed weapon and was caught doing so, I'd be thrown in jail.
Oh, well, it's to the point now that Wesley Clark wants to intern dissidents. It's like, what?
Yeah, really? Yeah. Freedom of speech? No. No. No, it's back to speech that is considered hateful. You know, for example, if we on this program expose and condemn the illogical nature of religious and political, even economic schemes, there are those who are adherents to those, advocates of those schemes, that will view what we say as disconcerting. And you know, there are all sorts of rules now. In many countries, it's fines and imprisonment for telling, you know, the truth is not an alibi. If you say something that is,
you can prove what you say, it won't make
hurtful.
Any difference.
Right.
You know, can I make a quick comment on the UC Davis report that was on the news in the break? And
sure.
And I'm pretty sure I'm correct on what I heard on the radio yesterday. And UC Davis went to the state. Now, remember, this is a state-funded university system,
mm-hmm.
paid for by the citizens through their taxation. They went to the state and they said, "We're broke. We can't do our mission. Our job is to educate people. We don't have enough money." And they negotiated with the legislature for 6 months in order to get a bigger contract to get more money.
Mm-hmm.
And from, remember, we're bankrupt out here just like the federal government, but they did that, and they got it.
Mm-hmm.
At no time did they talk about anything else, and then within 1 month, they declared yesterday, the day before yesterday, that they were going to have all their employees were going to move to $15 an hour, which is $14 million increase in the budget across the state.
Mm-hmm.
And then it was implied, at least on this radio show, if I didn't get it mistaken, it was implied that if you were a vendor of the University of California and you have employees that are making $9 an hour and don't go to $15 an hour,
they will stop using
you. Will not be looked upon very favorably.
Yeah.
Now, do you see all the ramble? This is a state-run, state tax-paid-for institution.
Managed by and controlled by economic morons.
You know,
they're hell-bent on destroying the economy.
Yeah. Well, and because if they destroy the economy, guess what they have? Absolute and total control. When they destroy the economy, they can confiscate savings, they can control bank accounts, and they can determine who buys and sells, and everyone becomes dependent on them. That's what they're trying to do.
They even dictate to your business what you can pay.
Yeah. Oh, no, by the way, they're not teaching people. They're indoctrinating them. Now,
and
what is wrong with the University of California, Davis, simply charging their students a tuition that will pay for the product that they're providing? And if they don't solicit, if they're incapable of getting enough students to pay a sufficient amount of money to provide that product, maybe they should be allowed to fold as inept. You know, if a business can't get paid.
Get the pension plans then.
Yeah, but, you know, if a business, you know, if McDonald's opens a restaurant and they can't get enough people to pay them enough money for the hamburgers and fries to cover their operating costs, they close it down. And so why should the university be allowed to fail at its mission if it can't provide a product that people are willing to pay for?
Right.
I mean, that's the thing I would do with schools. I mean, I would put all schools on a voucher program so that, you know, you'd have all people given equal access to education, but total and complete free will as to where their child is educated. So rather than there be public schools and private schools, there would just be schools, and every parent would be given a voucher for their child, and they could decide where they wanted their child to go to school. I would have no busing, so you've got to get them there, just like they do for private schools now. There's no busing. You've got to get them there. It's your responsibility. You've had the children to pick them up. But give a voucher, and if a school can't attract because it's performing poorly for the students, if a school can't attract the students, then it fails. It just closes. And I'll guarantee you, when there's money to be received, there will be private schools that perform on behalf of the students that will get parents to say, "Yeah, I'm willing to give you my voucher for my child because you'll do a better job than that school that's failed down the street."
Well, that's supposedly the allure of the charter schools.
Yes.
But the problem is they have unelected boards and there's very little control over curricula.
Yeah.
Well, I'm a private school. I mean, I had a big school, now I have a little school because I'm semi-retired.
Uh-huh.
I have more people and I have nothing, I do it all. I mean, so it's all, I mean, obviously Terry helps, but.
Yeah.
I have to fill up those seats to pay for the rent and pay for the goods and so forth and so on.
And you better provide a product that people are willing to pay you for.
I had to pay for all the easels, I had to pay for all the chairs, all of that, on and on and on.
Right, right.
And it's my skill that gets them in there, it's my marketing that gets them in there, my demos that create interest. And once they get in there, they have to produce well enough that they want to stay.
Right.
Going. I have all my classes are full, as normal, Right. And I have more people on my waiting list to get in than are there. And I'm not bragging. I'm just saying if you do your job right, you'll fill up your school. And
but there's no degree for it.
They just get a product at the end and they say, I like that product, therefore I'm willing to pay for it.
Yeah, and the difference is that in private enterprise, I know there's a lot of people that just hate corporations and they just despise private enterprise. But the fact of the matter is that when people are free to build businesses, most people, like you, are responsible. They recognize that they need to provide a value to those who they're serving, otherwise they won't exist. But a public school doesn't have to do that.
Mm-hmm.
The teacher can't be fired. The principal can't be fired. The school board can't be fired. And the students have to show up. If they don't show up, their parents are subject to all manner of incarceration and fine.
Yeah, that seems a bit harsh. How do you control rebellious child?
Yeah, so you know, they fail to perform because there's no incentive to perform. If there's no incentive, there's no reason to work. You know, in a dependency society like we have in so many places in America, like what caused Greece to fail. In a dependency society, what incentive is there to work if the government is going to coddle you? The government's going to pay for you not to work. You know, in California, a welfare recipient in California earns the equivalent of what someone would earn working 8 hours a day, 5 days a week, for $21 an hour. What's the incentive to work?
Oh, my gosh. That's outlandish.
I wonder if some of this problem that we're experiencing over personal responsibility is really a failure of the very educational systems that we're talking about, teaching people about economics. You know, there's two types of economics, and both are important. One is to have a non-indoctrination, non-politically correct discussion of fascism, communism, socialism, and free enterprise. So that people understand the differences between those systems and that fascism and communism are different sides of the same coin. And understand the nature of governments and the conditions of human beings and the economic history of companies or countries that choose us. But also there's another form of economics that I think is maybe two other forms that are really important. One is business economics. What do businesses strive to accomplish? How do they accomplish those tasks? You know, what is business economics? How do you borrow money? How do you service the debt? You know, what is considered earnings of a business? What is accrual accounting? What is cost accounting? You know, just practical business economics, so people aren't so illiterate in this regard. And then the last is personal home economics, about, you know, what is an adjustable rate loan? What amount should you put down on a house to be secure in it? You know, how many years should you have a mortgage? How large should your mortgage be based upon your earnings? What is appropriate to put into to savings for your retirement? You know, just
and budgeting. Why is it such a tragedy that so many people are now having to take out reverse mortgages so that they don't have a house to pass to their children?
Yeah, this is it is true. It's a huge business in America, reverse mortgages.
Mm-hmm. But every star marketing them, but you're talking about mortgages.
Yeah.
Home economics. How can you have home economics when you don't even get to keep your home, and you use an economic device to extract all the value from your house just to get through your dotage?
There's another point to the housing too. As inflation goes up,
mm-hmm.
you pay. You remember you're paying. Now, let's say you're like me and you retire and buy another house somewhere else.
Uh-huh.
But if you stay in that state and you're still under those tax things, what they've done is over the years they've raised the price, not the value of the house, but your dollar has been so weakened and the taxes are so high. And now you have this humongous property tax every year because you had to roll all that gain that you had. You had to roll it over into a house.
Right. And it's not really a gain because all they did is devalue the currency.
It's just, but I mean, that increase, I should call it.
Right.
Or devalued dollars, and now you're paying an enormous amount. So you, and then the same thing with your 401ks, when you start to take those out, you're now in a, probably a higher tax bracket because if you take them out and try to live off of your money instead of theirs, the tax consequences are huge.
Correct.
So I mean, right. it keeps you in a high. You know, they would say, well, you'll be in a lower tax bracket later. Well, no, you won't because inflation is so high. You have to take out big chunks of that money now because you cannot but go to the grocery store on what you thought you were going to do at $25,000 a year, and now it's got to be $50,000 a year, whatever the consequence.
Yeah, and it's also
whatever your circumstance is. Yeah,
if you've saved, been responsible and saved money.
Mm-hmm.
If you've paid off your home. If you've if you have an investment portfolio, then you don't even qualify for Social Security, even though you probably paid more into it than anybody else. You don't get anything back.
In fact, I could buy a little bitty airplane.
Yeah, here you go.
that's perverse. That's nothing but theft because it was supposed to be a mandatory program. That you would benefit from, but that's crazy.
So
they don't even teach guns and butter, in economic classes where we used to take those in college, where they would say, society, you got this choice, you're either going to give it domestically or you're going to do it on military, and people don't have a clue what they're talking about.
Can you imagine if they actually taught supply-side economics and called it what it actually is as opposed to trickle-down, and if they taught business economics so that people could equate federal deficits to the nature of personal and business economics and understand how bankrupt the system is that we've deployed and perhaps then that stop electing politicians that want to continue this bankrupt system?
Yeah.
And then maybe people could think and they would choose, it was freedom. Over being
they choose Paul's bow down to government approach.
Right. Submit to the government and be a slave to the very thing that claims it's liberating you as opposed to the one who can liberate you.